Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Keeping It Real, the Vancouver and area residential real estate podcast that aims to cut through all the nonsense or whatever gets in the way of finding out what's really happening in our market. My name is Jackie McCarnan, and I am your host for Keeping It Real. I am a Vancouver and area residential realtor, so uniquely suited to weigh in on such issues. As always, to make my managing broker happy, I like to provide a small disclaimer that says that anything you hear in this podcast is my opinion based on my experience and research. That statement has never been more important than it is today, because this topic has a lot of research. On today's episode of Keeping It Real, I'm going to talk about all of the different levels of government and their attempts to, or their policies around affordable housing and fixing the housing crisis in Canada. And it is a doozy. I think I've used that word before, doozy, but I mean, it's appropriate here. So without further ado, let's jump right in. I think to begin with, it's probably interesting to note how we got into this problem in the first place. So back in the 80s and before, the building housing was a federal thing. So the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation was involved in building new housing. The federal government was involved in building new housing. And in the late 80s, the responsibility for building housing fell to the provinces. And then building new housing kind of, I wouldn't say ground to a halt, but it certainly diminished. The result of giving the provinces that responsibility was that really we have now had a decades-long period of time where not enough housing, non-market housing or housing for people who really need it has been built by the provinces. So in 2017, the Liberal government under Justin Trudeau decided to get back into the housing market and start making policy around building more housing. So for those of you who follow this sort of thing, you may be surprised that there is now a federal housing policy. And that federal housing policy trickles down to policy of the provinces, which then informs policy of the municipalities. So that's just kind of a very, very super surface, quick outline of how we got into this problem in the first place. In order to kind of keep things straight as we go, I think it's best that I start off talking about the federal housing policy, which, you know, is the culmination of a whole bunch of research and policy groups and that sort of thing since 2017, since the federal government kind of stepped back into housing in general. And these federal housing policies were created through, you know, years and years and years of research and trying to find a solution to Canada's housing problem. Just a caveat here, while I personally am quite political, I am absolutely not being political in any way on this podcast, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing that the federal government is involved in housing policy. I just want to present the facts as they are laid out to me and as my research has shown. But again, as I always say to you, I am super happy to hear your opinions on this and we can have a conversation about it and, you know, leave your comments. I do think one thing we could all agree on is that Canada is absolutely in a housing crisis. The prices are very high. We're worried about the next generation, where they're going to be able to buy into the market, or if they'll even be able to afford to rent in the cities where they grew up. And that's a real problem when you're looking at one-bedroom condos in downtown Vancouver renting for $3,000 a month. No amenities, no storage, no parking. It's a crisis, especially because incomes don't reflect that. So we're looking at some people, many people in Vancouver are spending 50% of their income on housing, which doesn't really set them up to get ahead. All right, so we've outlined the problem and we can look at some of the things that are part of the solution. I think that I'm going to link to a page on the government website. Obviously, that is a place to research exactly what the government is doing or intends to do with regard to housing. And this is all going to tie together. So it's been really fascinating researching this because I'm going to slide out of this conversation for 1 second and just say that I attended a District of North Vancouver seminar last week where they talked about the new provincial legislation, Bill 44. That's called the Housing Supply Act. And it was very interesting in that room because a whole bunch of questions came up. But what I found when researching the Federal Housing Act or the federal housing changes is that lots of those questions are actually kind of not answered, but addressed in the Federal Housing Act. You know what? When I said I'm going to start at the federal level, I think I just have to start at the thing that's happening and then tell you how it's happening on the federal, provincial, and municipal level. So one of the things is the new Bill 44, that's a provincial bill here in British Columbia, is that, and we talked about this in another podcast, episode 10, the new Housing Supply Act, and that will allow people with single family lots to build up to 6 units on their property, depending on the size. Some of those can have 4 property or 4 units. But the point being that no longer is a single family lot zoned that way. It is zoned as multifamily. And then when I was at the info session, I learned that there are some significant exceptions to that. In the District of North Vancouver, one of the exceptions that is having the most effect is the threatened property exemption. So properties that are threatened by earthquake or flood or fire. So I spoke to the mayor of North Vancouver, District of North Vancouver, and he said that years ago, their engineers kind of were able to identify several properties that were considered more likely to be threatened than other properties. So they are using that particular map in order to map out the exemptions for the Housing Supply Act with regard to how it affects the District of North Vancouver. Another big thing that came up during that meeting is anybody who does build does not have to allow for parking. So let's say you go from one house on a piece of property to 4 houses on that same piece of property, and 6 of your neighbors do the same. So now we have whatever, what's 6 times 4? 24. I'm not the best at math, but I think that's 24 units with no additional parking. So then are all those people parking on the streets? How does that look? That was one of the big things that came up from the meeting. One of the things that I've noticed in the Federal Housing Act or proposals is that there's a public transit fund and a Canadian infrastructure fund. So another thing that came up at the meeting were things like services. How are we going to service all these extra units? And there looks like there's a $6 billion Canadian infrastructure fund coming that is specifically designated for that sort of thing. We're updating services. Now, of course, things like, you know, changing the amount of water that can get through pipes to buildings is a big deal. It's not nothing. So that $6 billion is probably not going to do much. But again, I don't know. But I think it's interesting that when you look at the federal information, a lot of the answers were answered, including like a public transit fund, which would be adding, you know, more density to higher transit hubs or close to post-secondary schools, meaning that you reduce the amount of parking needed because you are putting new units, more units closer to public transit or high schools, that sort of thing. That's in the federal one. The provincial one, I didn't get that sense. It might be in there. I might have missed it. But I think that it's important to note that the questions that were asked last week at the meeting that I went to are also questions that were asked at the federal level. And I'm sure they were asked at the provincial level too. But I think that it's important to note that other people are asking these questions. There's another one of the federal policies is a Canadian Secondary Suite Loan Program that is being put forth by the CMHC, Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation. And there are $40,000 low interest loans available to renovate your home to include a secondary suite. Now, I don't really know if that counts if you're going to take it down and put 4 suites up, but probably not. But one thing that's important to note is, and this was a pretty interesting statistic. In 2020, Canada's ranked 2nd to last in the rate of approval process for new building. And that's due to red tape at the municipal level and zoning issues and that sort of thing. So Bill 44 from the province, the Housing Supply Act, is working toward eliminating a great deal of that red tape by not requiring public approval. So no public readings at council. If whatever you are doing on your property conforms with new official community plan, I should add that official community plan, all municipalities in British Columbia need to provide a new official community plan that incorporates this new zoning, the Housing Supply Act, Bill 44 zoning. All those official community plans have to be finished by the end of December 2025. So let's say Bruce and Zoe own a single family lot in Lynn Valley. It's on a 3 by 140 foot, I'm just rounding off, 140 foot lot. It's not in what is considered to be a threatened area. And they want to, the house is super old, starting to cost them a ton of money. They want to take the house down and put 4 units up. As long as their lot falls within the new zoning under the new OCP, which again won't be written until the end of, or doesn't need to be finished until the end of December 2025. But if their house falls under all of those parameters, then they do not have to have it read through council. It would automatically get approved for development. And this is my understanding of what we listened to the other night. I could be wrong. It's a government thing, so it's a little more nuanced than maybe seems so in the meeting. But if their property is in Upper Lynn Valley and the back of it is sloped to a ravine, it's very possible that it is on the threatened property list, in which case it may not have had its zoning changed. And if it didn't have its zoning changed from single family, then it would not, I guess they would have to apply to have the zoning changed. I think that's what happens. But all of this to say that we have to have longer, larger conversations about all this sort of thing, because there are a whole lot of questions that aren't really being addressed at the municipal level. They're asking the questions. The province is saying, we're going to do this. The municipalities are saying, sure, how? And the province is saying, well, the federal government said we can do this. So I think we need some kind of map. Maybe I'll make a map of how everything all fits together. But it is certainly going to be interesting. And I think that the idea that the federal government has taken ownership back of housing in Canada, in my opinion, if it hadn't been working with the provincial and municipal governments, then maybe, and in the past, before like 1987, it was doing a pretty good job, then maybe this is the answer. I don't know. And I don't have a crystal ball. I'm not Kreskin, which dates me to even say that. But I do know that we are in a ridiculous housing crisis, and our kids are going to suffer for it, and so are theirs. So while some of these policies seem incredibly verbose, they, you know, like it's a lot all at once, it probably is one of a case where everything's been kind of worked on in the background for such a long time, and none of us really knew what was going on. And then all of a sudden, we get these policies from the provincial government and the federal government saying, this is what's going to happen. I think probably comes as a surprise to many of us, the amount of policy that is coming out. For some people who don't like a lot of government oversight, this might feel like a lot. I just personally, I am kind of the eternal optimist. So I kind of hope that it is going to have a great effect on housing in Canada. But I'm also a bit of a realist, less realist than optimist. I'm not entirely sure how it's all going to come together. I mean, if we go back to, what was it, Bruce and Zoe? So Bruce and Zoe are going to build their 4 units on their property. What are the services to that property going to be like? Like, how are there going to be 4 washing machines and 4 dryers? How is the how's the electrical going to handle that? How's the grid going to handle that? Are we going to upgrade the grids? There's, you know, they're talking about that infrastructure fund. That sort of thing is going to come together. You know, more water, more electricity, more transit. All those things have to come together. But I do agree that we are woefully neglectful in our ability to get housing proposals through. And this from a conversation with a colleague, I was told that when a developer develops a property in Vancouver, before they sell anything at presale, before they even turn the land over or, you know, whatever it is they do, you know, when they go out there with the shovel and the gold shovel and they break ground, that's what it's called. Before they even break ground, they're at $350 a foot just in permits and having engineers in there and all that sort of stuff. So it's expensive for developers too. So if we're seeing something that is being sold at $1,500 a foot here in Vancouver, and $350 of that is before the developer even breaks ground, you know, before they bulldoze anything, before they build anything, before they invest in presale, or if they have to buy out somebody who was on the land before. I mean, no wonder the prices are higher and higher and higher. I have a feeling that this is going to be a topic of the podcast many, many, many times. I intend to have Councillor Jordan Back from the District of North Vancouver on to talk about the Housing Supply Act and the TOD, Transit Oriented Density Act. I want to hear what Jordan has to say and what other councillors have to say. We'll get somebody in from the City of North Van and the District of West Van over the next couple of months, I think, as things roll out. The deadline for all of this happening is June 30th, so that's when the province rolls out the new bills. And according to the mayor of the District of North Vancouver, any development applications you put in between now and then are not going to get a lot of attention because staff is really working hard to satisfy the provincial requirements by June 30th. I guess we're going to see what happens. It's going to be really interesting. Let me know what you think. For those of you that know me, you know that I have a nonprofit here in North Vancouver called North Van Cares. We started the nonprofit during COVID, and our very first beneficiary for the funds that were raised through North Van Cares was Backpack Buddies. Now, Backpack Buddies is absolutely near and dear to my heart. They are a fantastic organization started here in North Vancouver. The idea was that they would send food and supplies home with kids on the weekends, those kids who were taking part in lunch programs at schools in the Lower Mainland. During COVID, they had to pivot and they ended up just doing a marvelous job at getting food to kids who needed it all over the province. It was incredible to watch. I absolutely love these guys. They do such a wonderful job. You can go and volunteer to help pack backpacks at Backpack Buddies in North Van, or you can donate and you can do so on their website, which I will link in the show notes. But you know what? If you need someone fantastic to support, Backpack Buddies is your go-to. I always like to give you guys a little tidbit of something interesting I'm reading. I have a favorite author. His name is Edward Rutherford. I don't know how many of you know him. He writes these kind of epic novels that go from their historical-based fiction. They go all the way from sometimes from the Druids, in the case of his book Sarum, all the way to the Second World War, and it follows a family line. And I'm the first to admit that I have kind of stayed in a certain lane for a very long time, reading about Europe and Ireland and England and Europe during the war. And then Edward Rutherford wrote a book called China. And actually wrote one called Ruska, which I read and love. But then he's written one called China, which I'm reading right now. And it's just unbelievable. It's so rich and interesting. And it tells all about the history of China and in story form, which I love. So if you're looking for a good one that will last you probably to the end of the summer, because it's, I don't know, 40,000 pages, China by Edward Rutherford is a fantastic book. As always, thanks so much for listening to Keeping It Real. I hope that you learned something. I hope that I learned something. I hope that we all learn together. You can get Keeping It Real on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can also get it on my website, northvanhomesales.com/podcasts. Where you can access all of the other episodes too. And I would love it if you would subscribe and comment. All your comments are welcome. And finally, I am excited to announce that on next week's show, I am going to have a fantastic special guest who is also a friend of mine, Nina Ferrantino's from Unique Accommodations. I'm not going to tell you anything else about it other than that. So you'll have to tune in to find out all the interesting things Nina has to tell us.